Shabbat Shalom, everyone. Today we're going to be going over the beginning parts of Revelation and how to comprehend it. I have a lot of references for you to write down so you can read it on your own, because we have a lot to cover and I want to try to get through that so that we can actually move into what's in the text and what it actually reveals. If you hadn't read last week, I'll go ahead and make the references again. There's some allusions to Ezekiel 8 through 12 and also Daniel 9 through 12 in the dress and attire of what our Mashiach's wearing. There's other allusions I'm also going to reference as we go, but if you read those, you'll get a good comprehension about some of the things that are about to go on. And the same thing with everything else that we're going to mention. So, not to reiterate what we'd already covered, I just want to point out some things to think upon in regard to the first two chapters, or first three chapters. So, and all of this has to do with what's made evident in Revelation. Everything in it is important. All the references are important because it refutes the error that's going to be introduced. But some of the things to consider, it's our Abba, or our Father, who gave his Son this revelation, and it was the Son who revealed it to his servant, specifically one who bore witness to all of the good news and the testimony of Yahushua Mashiach. Right? I also want to point out that it mentions that the Aleph and Tau is Yahuwah, and it's the one who's pierced, which is also mentioned in Zechariah chapter 12, that it's Yahuwah speaking. If you read the entire chapter, it mentions it right in the first verse, and he's the one whom everyone would look on whom they pierced. So he's not his own father, but he is called Yahuwah. That's important as we go through the rest of the scriptures here for context. If you'll recall, in the common scriptures, it mentions that he was given the name above every name, and that to him every knee would bow and every tongue would confess, which is also alluded to as the Father's name in the foretellers. You can see that he's called Yahuwah. Again, Genesis chapters 18 and 19, where Yahuwah is seen as a man. In Psalm 110, and in a few other places here that we're going to get to. He has, one of the key things to keep in mind here is that he has the seven stars in his hand. And the seven stars are, the secret to that is the seven stars are messengers. The seven stars are alluding to the what we call planets. The Greek word for planets, it just means wandering star. It's opposed to the fixed stars that don't stay in a fixed circuit around the north center. But to point out some of the things in his attire, you should read this on your own. I'm not going to cover reading it. I just want to point out the things that are applicable for what we're going to be studying. All right? His robe and belt and trumpet, like I said, is mentioned in Gad the Seer, chapters 1 and 14, Ezekiel 8 through 12, and Daniel 9 through 12. His white hair denotes that he was from of old, but he was newly present in the world when he was born of his mother, Miriam. And that is something that's alluded to also in a place in the Shepherd of Hermas, which I would like to read to you very shortly. Or it's just very short. But this is one of two readings I'm going to have. The rest of it we're going to be talking. This is a part in the parables of Hermas where he's going over the building of the tower. And he sees the different things, that it's founded on a rock and there's a new gate built on it that flashes, that shines like the brightness of the sun. And he's questioning the messenger about these things. He says, I request you, sir, to explain to me exactly in the order that I shall inquire of you. First of all, sir, say I, explain to me the rock and the gate. How, sir, say I? Is the rock ancient, but the gate recent? Listen, said he, and comprehend, foolish man. The Son of Elohim is older than all his creation, so that he became the Father's minister in his creation. Therefore also he is ancient. But the gate, sir, why is it recent? Say I. Because, said he that made manifest, or he was made manifest in the last days of the consummation. Therefore the gate was made recent, that they which are to be delivered may enter through it into the kingdom of Elohim. Did you see, said he, that the stones which came through the gate have gone to the building of the tower, but those which came not through it were cast away again to their own place? I saw, sir, say I. Thus said he, no one shall enter into the kingdom of Elohim except he receive the name of his son. For this you desire to enter into any city, or for if you desire to enter in any city, and that city is walled all around and has one gate only, can you enter into that city except through the gate which it has? Why, how, sir, say I, is it possible otherwise? If then you cannot enter into the city except through the gate itself, even so, said he, a man cannot enter into the kingdom of Elohim except by the name of his son that is beloved by him. All right. And then that has to do with he's from of old, but he was newly in the world, right? His eyes is a flame of fire has to do with jealousy and rebuke. If you look at Song of Solomon 8:6, you'll see that, and also Yeshayahu chapter 66, verse 1 and 2, but the whole thing is applicable. His feet like burnished brass or refined in the furnace has to do with the furnace of affliction and the trials that came upon him, Yeshayahu 53, but also 48:10. The voice of many waters is the peoples, tribes, nations, and tongues that speak the truth. It's a right. That's alluding to what we can find in Revelation 17:15, and also in the Dead Sea Scrolls, in one of the interpretations for the foretellers, when it's talking about Manasseh, it mentions the waters around the place is also alluding to the peoples. So that's two witnesses. For the right hand, again, he has the seven stars. It shows that he controls them. He has control and providence over all things in creation, but he specifically controls luminaries. That's seen throughout the Psalms and also in Jeremiah chapters 31 and 33. His mouth being as a two-edged sword, that has to do with the word that he spoke that will judge men the last day. You can find this in Proverbs 5, Psalm 149, Hebrews 4, 12 through 16, and Yahuchanan, or John, chapter 12, 44 through 50. His face or presence is like the sun in its brightness, is something that we've already talked about, where the sun represents like the light of knowledge. So all those references that we've covered before. And then the secret, the key that we find in the first chapter there is that the seven stars are the seven messengers and the seven lampstands. So, sorry about that. The seven messengers are the seven stars, and the seven lampstands are the seven assemblies. A lot of people like to talk about how the assemblies are allusions to the different ages and the different periods of time that would be, and that is something to look into. It's something that we can go over and pay attention to, but that's not what is applicable for the moment. What I'd like to address your attention to are the facts that he points out, because everything that he addresses to these assemblies applied in real history to them and was applicable about what was supposed to come. So I encourage you to read this on your own time. But I'm going to point out some things that you can find as you go through it, and then references that you can look up for fuller information in the scriptures. So in the first one, they tried and rejected evil ones and false emissaries. in their time. If you read all the epistles with the Ephesians, including the three epistles of Yahuchanan and the letter from Shaul, you'll get more context for what was going on. But they tried and rejected evil ones and false emissaries, but they rejected their first love, or what was called the agape, the love feast, which is the communion with believers, the partaking of the bread and wine in fellowship, specifically was part of the love feast or the agape. However, one thing they had to their credit is that they hate the works of the Nicolaitans, which we'll see in just a moment will come up again and again, because it was the Nicolaitans that were the instigators of what overthrew the belief and killed the truth. In the second one, they're persecuted, believers are persecuted by those who say they confess, acknowledge, and praise Yahuwah. They say they're Yahudim, but they are not. They serve Satan. An allusion to that, or you can find the differences between those circumcised in the heart and those that are not, who are the true Yahudim, as per Scripture, in the book of Romans, chapter 1 and 2, which is also an important place to pay attention to, who it's being written to. In the next one, the Nicolaitans are identified with the teachings of Balaam, where they teach idolatry and fornication or whoring with the children. You can find in detail what Balaam taught and the effects of it in Numbers 22 through 25. Also, his foretelling in chapter 24 mentions the star that will rise. It has to do with the morning star. It's alluded to in a little bit. In the next one, it mentions Jezebel and her being a female foreteller that was allowing mixture or eating of sacrifices offered to idols and allowing mixture and whoring, the same things that the Nicolaitans were doing. But this is alluding to specifically Jezebel, just like King Ahab's wife. And you can find the information for her, which I encourage you to read this, 1 Kings, starting in chapter 16, and going through 2 Kings chapter 9. And also allusion to this in 2 Kepha 1:19. The next one, they are exposed as hypocrites. They act righteous but are dead in works, and they're not complete, so they do good and evil. And you can see allusions to this in 1 Thessalonians 5, chapter, or verse 2, and 2 Kepha chapter 3, verse 10. The next one, the congregation of Satan. This is what they're accused of being, not actually being of our Creator, but of serving the adversary. So his works and ways are things that they will do, everything contrary to the truth. What our Mashiach accused the Yahudim that rejected him of, you of your father the devil, it's because of his desires you seek to do. So you can find what that is in detail if you look at Wisdom of Solomon, chapters 12 through 14, Romans again, chapters 1 and 2, and also you hear about the Key of David. One thing I forgot to mention, the perfect that are of the belief will be kept from harm, and that's a promise given to the Philadelphians, which is something that we're seeing also throughout the scriptures. Hanok being translated, Eliyahu taken in a chariot of fire, Baruch and Ezra both being kept in paradise with them, and all those that are like them, that are made perfect, are kept safe from the time of trial. But one thing that is mentioned is the Key of David, and you can find a reference to that in Yeshayahu 22, verse 22. And then the last one is that they do good and evil. They're lukewarm. They're neither hot nor cold. It has more allusions to that. I'm not trying to get into that. The whole point here is pointing out the expose of the things that you're going to find that these people do. So they mix good and evil. They're full of riches and not suffering for what they do wrong. That's why he says that they should be redeemed through suffering and affliction, gold and silver refined in the furnace of fire. This is alluded to in Hebrews chapter 12. You have Mark 10:25, Luke 18:25, and Matthew 19:24 about the difficulties of the rich getting in. There's other references as well. But one more thing I would like to read just to cap off this section would be what is in the Recognitions of Clement about here or hereafter. The idea is that Yahuwah is the father of all the sons of Yaakov. Yaakov means literally that which comes at the heel. And the word Akob is one of three words in Hebrew that's used for the word of a reward, literally the thing that comes at the heel of what you're doing. That only happens to those that are not malicious in what they are doing. They don't contrive wickedness against their neighbor. And this is what I'd like to show you real quick with this last reading. So this is from book 8, I believe, starting at chapter 13. It says, "But someone will say, many have committed even murder and adultery and other crimes and have suffered no evil. This indeed is rare among men, except that they may often be for those who know not the counsel of Elohim. But Elohim, who knows all things, knows how and why he who sins does sin, and what causes each to sin. This, however, is in general to be noticed, that if any are evil, not so much in their mind as in their doings, and are not born to sin under incitement of purpose, but upon the punishment, upon them punishment is inflicted more speedily and more in the present life. For everywhere and always Elohim renders to everyone according to his deeds as he judges to be expedient." So, "but for those who purposely practice immorality, so that they sometimes even rage against those for whom they have received benefits and who take no thought for repentance, their punishment defers to the future. For these men do not, like those of whom we spoke before, deserve to end their punishment of their crimes in the present life, but is allowed them to occupy the present time as they will, because their correction is not such as need temporal chastisements, but as to demand the punishment of inheriting ageless fire. And there their ruachoth, or spirits, will seek repentance, where they will not be able to find it. But if while they were in this life, they had placed before their eyes the punishments that they will then suffer, they would certainly have bridled their lusts and would no wise have fallen into sin. For the comprehension of the ruach has much power for cutting off all its desires, especially when it has acquired the knowledge of shamayim, or heavenly things, by means of which, having received the light of truth, it will turn away from all darkness of evil actions. For as the sun obscures and conceals all the stars by the brightness of his shining, so also the mind, by the light of knowledge, renders all the lusts of the being ineffective and inactive, sending out upon them the thought of the judgment to come as its rays, so that they can no longer appear in the inner being. But as proof that the fear of Elohim is quite effective for the repressing of lusts, take the example of man's fear. Who is there among men that have never coveted his neighbor's goods, and yet they are restrained and act honestly through fear of the punishment that is prescribed by the laws? Through fear, tribes are subject to their kings, and armies obey with arms in their hands. Slaves, although they are stronger than their masters, yet through fear submit to their master's rule. Even wild beasts are tamed by fear. The strongest bulls submit their necks to the yoke, and huge elephants obey their masters through fear. But why do we use man's examples when even Elohim's are not wanting? Does not the earth itself remain under the fear of precept, which it testifies by its motion and quaking? The sea keeps its prescribed bounds. The messengers maintain shalom, The stars keep their order, and the rivers their channels. It is certain also that demons are put to flight by fear, and not to lengthen the discourse by too many particulars. You see how the fear of Elohim restraining everything keeps all things in proper harmony and in their fixed order. How much more then may you be sure that the lusts of demons that arise in your hearts may be extinguished and wholly abolished by the admonition of the fear of Yahuwah, when even the inciters of lust are themselves put to flight by the influence of fear. You know that these things are so, but if you have anything to answer, proceed. Right. Now, all of that, and especially if you take the time to read the references that were shared, most in particular the ones in Ezekiel, Daniel, and if you have the Wisdom of Solomon, I highly encourage reading that one. Between chapters 12 and 14, you get an encapsulation of the things that the Canaanites were doing in the land that our Creator found abominable. And that's the same thing that Satan gets his children to do today. Also, you want to remember 1 Kings 16 through 2 Kings 9, where that covers Jezebel. And these things, what happened with them, both the punishments that happened and the effects of what they were doing, all play out as you see as we go along. So thank you for your time, and you have a wonderful Shabbat.